comes on or not. So, okay. All good? Better? Hello? Is that? I am talking. I got the signal to start from the back, so hello. Let me be probably another person to thank you all for coming to the Frameworks Conference this year. I hope so far you've found it informative and useful. These would not be very much fun without attendees, so thank you. And specifically, thanks for coming to see my talk this morning. It's called Designing Framework Agnostic Models with CFCs. My name is Brian Kotek. Just really quickly, a little bit about me. I am a senior developer at a company called eCivis. They're based out in California. I've been using CF for a long time. Adobe recently, actually last week, just made me a community expert. So hopefully I can live up to that label. I'm a member of Team Fusebox. This is a group that kind of oversees Fusebox and where that's going. And I guess just in general, I'm kind of a CF evangelist. I write articles, I blog, I moderate the Cold Fusion forums at DevShed to try to spread the love about Cold Fusion to maybe people that haven't heard of it or help people that do use it already use it a little more effectively. I just wanted to ask a little bit about you folks before I got into the presentation. How many of you use CFCs right now when you're doing development work? Okay, a lot. Good. That's a lot more than it's been previous years. How about model view controller pattern? Okay, wow. And how about a framework? And by that I mean like a public framework like Fusebox, Moglu, Mach2. Okay, good. So most of what I say will probably make sense, but I'll try to tailor that to the folks that didn't raise their hands, so not too lost. Stuff we're going to cover. I'm going to talk a bit about the model view controller pattern, what it is, how it works, why it's good, what it means to be framework agnostic, and it's kind of a maybe ambiguous term, so I'll explain why I chose it. Talk about a service layer. It's probably something that you've heard brought up now in a bunch of the sessions so far this conference. Explain kind of what that is and why you might want to use one. Why you should care. Some of this stuff actually takes some extra work up front or thinking or planning and can make things a little bit more complicated potentially, so why should I bother? You know, if I can make it work the easy way, why should I do this extra stuff to make a model agnostic of the framework? So try to explain why I think you should. And I have an example app that I'm going to run towards the end. It's basically three separate apps, the ModelGlu, Unity, Mach2, and Fusebox 5.1, all using a single model and a single view. So to show that what I'm actually talking about is, in fact, possible. And at the end, I'll have a Q&A. So if you've got any questions, try to maybe jot them down, hold them for the end, and I will answer as many as I can. Here's a model view controller diagram that I swiped from Adobe, so hopefully no one will sue me. Just really quickly, the basic gist of it is you've got a client, which is usually a person with a web browser. They click a link or submit a form. That goes to, it creates a request that gets received by your application, and what receives it is the controller. That's usually your framework like Fusebox or ModelGlu. The controller basically acts like a traffic cop, kind of figures out how to respond to the request and manages like the application flow. It calls the model, which is usually CFCs, asks the model to do some work like, run a database query or update a shopping cart or something along that line. Once the real work is done, it then renders a view, which is usually HTML with CSS and JavaScript, and that gets sent back to the client, and that's the page that they see in their browser. So pretty straightforward. Client requests a controller. Controller asks the model for some stuff. Controller renders a view, sends it back to the user. This is kind of the same info, just broken out in text instead of in a picture. But again, the controller is usually a framework. It receives the user requests. It gets data from the model. than the model, which is where I guess I would say the fun stuff happens. Oh, is it not on?
Okay.
Sorry about that. It's hard to tell when you're talking whether it's coming out of the speakers or not. Okay, what I was saying, the model is where the fun stuff happens. Business logic, that's data persistence, usually SQL database stuff. And that's transaction processing as well. And by that I mean not just database transactions, which you think of with the CF transaction tag maybe, but just anything in the model that needs to kind of succeed or fail as a single group. Like, I don't know, if they check out and you want to validate their credit card and deduct something from inventory, you kind of usually want that to all succeed or fail together. So I'd consider that a transaction, too. And the model handles that. And then the view is usually, like I said, just HTML, CSS, JavaScript, you know, that sort of stuff. Stuff I'm really bad at, basically. So as you'll see when you see the sample app. But, okay, I apologize for this. Oh, I guess it actually shows up pretty big. I was worried that it was going to be too small. I made it as big as I could to fit on the slide. But don't worry if you can't read it, because I'll kind of walk through it. But this is basically an example of the model kind of bleeding over into the controller. You start off with, I actually have a laser pointer that I used to play with my cat, but I realized I'd actually have a use for it in public speaking, so I'll try not to get too carried away with it. Just a little bit of context first, I guess. This is basically supposed to be a listener for like a bookstore. You can see it's called Product Listener, and the gist of it is it's get recently viewed products, which would be something like if you were at Amazon.com and there's like a little pod on the sidebar that would show you, you know, what you've recently looked at, the products you recently looked at. That's sort of the gist of what this is supposed to be doing. You can tell it's a listener because it extends the Mach2 listener component. The method is called get recently viewed products. And basically, as with all listeners in Mach 2, a single argument coming in, Mach 2 framework event object. I var scope my local struct, as we all should when we're worrying about thread safety. And then basically what it's doing is it's saying, if there is an event argument named product ID, you know, run a query based on that product ID to get some product information. And then once that's finished, if there isn't a variable named session.recentproducts, create one with a default of an empty array and append that query data to the array. So it's basically, you can kind of see it's anytime there's a product ID, it asks the database for some data and then it adds it to the session scope in this array, and that's how it keeps track of the products you were looking at. Once that's finished, it adds that session variable to the event. So that's how Mach 2 kind of keeps track of things that are going on in the request, so it can be used later on in a view or something like that. So, on first glance, maybe you'll see there's a lot of stuff going on in here. I would argue probably too much stuff, so I'll break it out a little bit more. I'll start off by saying this is probably the most common way people kind of overlap their model and their controller. I'm guilty of doing this myself. When I started doing Mach 2 stuff, I said, a listener, let's make it do everything. But there's some problems with that approach. First, you can see I've coupled my controller to my database. Not only the fact that I'm using a database at all, but the fact that, you know, if this query was more complicated, it might have SQL Server specific function calls or something like that in it. And if I ever needed to switch to Oracle, I'd have to go to all my controllers and change all my queries to, you know, point to or use Oracle functions instead of SQL Server functions. So that's not good. Pretty much this logic is only reusable by cut and paste. If I needed to use this query somewhere else, I'd pretty much have two choices. One would be copy it and paste it in the other listener. And the other choice would be try to break it out into its own separate little individual listener method, which would kind of get nasty fast because you'd end up with tons and tons of listener methods that were all really granular, and that's really not the point. And finally, the
controller is also coupled to the persistence mechanism, meaning the session scope. Like now it knows that I am using a session scope to track this. If I ever wanted to change to cookies or, you know, client variables or whatever the next great thing Adobe comes up with for, you know, keeping track of how a user is using your system. You can imagine if I had lots of session scope stuff going on in my application, I'd have lots of listener methods to update, you know, in order to change that. So probably not such a good idea. Ideally, a CFC should be to do one thing. It's kind of, there's a term for it, it's called cohesion, which means it does one thing, it has a single responsibility, which means it should also have only one reason to change. And this basically has lots of reasons to change. There's too much stuff going on in here. So the gist here is whenever you see lots of logic in a controller, probably should raise a red flag. I've seen long listener methods, but usually it has to be related to deciding like what events to announce or what fuse actions to do, things like that. When you start getting into this kind of stuff, it's time to reassess, I would say. So here is a second way of looking at the problem, and I have a better way with a question mark up there. You can see it's the same method, get recently viewed products, still getting an event argument. But now all that stuff in the middle is gone. There's no database queries or session scope stuff happening. Instead, I've just got this one line that says basically set get recently viewed products to a variable, and that is get product service, which basically just returns an instance of a model component. I could have put variables.instance.productService, but I'm one of these people that likes methods for these sorts of things. Anyway, give me the product service, and then from that, give me the recently viewed products. And I'm passing in the event argument, because that's where the product ID and all the other stuff that Mach2 is keeping track of lives. And then I'm just setting that back into the event argument. Again, get recently viewed products is being set back into the event. So, again, at first glance, this seems to be much simpler and shorter and cleaner, and maybe this is much better than the previous way of doing it. But I would say it is not. There's a subtle reason for it. The model is now coupled to the Mach2 event object. The fact that I'm passing the event object into my model now means that the model has to know that I'm using Mach2. If I wanted to switch the model to use, let's say, Model Glue also has an event object, but it is not the same as the Mach2 one. It has some different methods and things like that. So while at first glance this seems like I've eliminated a lot of extra stuff from my controller, this is basically going too far the other way. It's going from having too much logic in your controller to now I'm coupling my model to my controller. So this isn't good either. So is there like some kind of middle ground that we can find? I think that there is, without too much extra work. Again, we've got get recently viewed products, same deal, passing in the event object. But now, I'm saying if there is an event argument defined called product ID, get that product ID out of the event and set it into a, you know, local variable, and then pass that in to the model. And then, obviously, same deal here, you know, set the get recently viewed products back into the event. So the difference here is probably kind of subtle, but it is crucial because I'm passing in a generic value now into my model. There's no, the model would never know that I was using Mach2 here. Anything could send, this is basically an integer, and anything could pass an integer, right? It could be Fusebox, it could be Model Glue, it could be none of the above. It could be a web service or Flash remoting call or, you get the idea. Basically, anything can pass a simple value like that. So now we're getting, you know, to a good spot, I would say, because the idea is to pass a non-framework specific value in when you're passing stuff into the model. It could be a simple value like an integer, it could be a complex value like an array or structure, and it could even be a transfer object or some other CFC, but the key idea is that it's not tied to the framework that you're using. So the idea here, I've actually got it broken out a little bit on the next slide. The controller only handles the controller duties that we were talking about. It's only doing traffic cop kind of stuff. And the model is not coupled to the controller. All it needs is a simple integer. So pretty much anything can pass that, which is sort of what we're after. The controller should be as dumb as you can make it, basically. The dumber the better, the smaller the better, usually. And this is kind of what I mean when I called the presentation framework agnostic models, and not, I almost called it framework neutral models, but then I realized that that sort of implies you have to have a framework. It just means that it doesn't matter which framework you use, where like framework agnostic really means the model doesn't even care if there is a framework at all. It like I said, it could be web service calls, which doesn't even use a framework at all. It's just, you know, some web service calling your model directly. So that's sort of the idea behind it. Going through the previous couple slides, you can see that it's not always completely obvious when, you know, the model and the controller are kind of overlapping like this. And I think part of the confusion, or part of the reason for that, that it's kind of hard at first at least to see kind of where that dividing line should be, is that, at least for me, I at the beginning at least, I kind of didn't get where the controller stops and the model starts. So I have a slide here called Where Does the Controller End? And once I sort of understood this, it made a little bit more sense, like where I should have that dividing line between the model and the controller. In Mach 2, the listener CFCs are part of the controller. This was probably the hardest one for me back when I started messing with Mach 2. I came from Fusebox, where the controller is basically an XML file. And when I looked at Mach 2, and it has this XML config file, and I was like, oh, okay, there's the controller. It's this XML file. So that meant, oh, no problem sticking all this logic in my listeners, until I ended up having to maintain that, and it turned into a lot of pain. So once I realized that the listener CFCs are actually part of the controller, that's, you know, that made it make a little bit more sense to me. Model Glue arguably makes it more obvious because it calls its controller CFCs controller CFCs. They extend a controller abstract class, and, you know, that one's a little bit more of a no-brainer, I guess. If listener, I guess, threw me off. Maybe I'm alone in that, but you can see that, you know, when it's called controller, a little bit more obvious. And then, like I said, for Fusebox, the circuit XML files are part of the, are basically the controller, which it has some good things and bad things. And one of the good things, arguably, is that it's harder to accidentally put too much logic in your circuit XML files because the grammar that you can use in the XML is limited. So you can't do too much extra stuff in your controller. They kind of did that deliberately. So it makes it a little bit harder to make these kinds of mistakes in Fusebox, I would say, but you still can do it. So just be careful or be aware. Let's see. So really quickly, kind of a wrap-up of what we've talked about already. Queries, references to the session scope, and business logic should be kept in the model and not in the controller. And conversely, framework-specific stuff like the event object shouldn't be passed into the model. This is probably the key of the whole presentation. I mean, if you take nothing else away, this is the basic gist of it. Because if you do this, if you think about this when you're at the beginning, when you're kind of building things, and keep this in mind, you're almost all the way to having a model that's going to be independent of your controller and can be used in basically any situation. So let's see. Yes? Sure.
I missed where the line is because I'm still seeing a tight coupling in the two examples. The second example shows it in line, the third example shows it. It's been separated out, but it's still there. So what's the difference?
Well, the difference is maybe I need to make it more obvious. This is the second example. I'm actually passing the event argument into the model, like the Mach 2 event object is being passed, which means that now in my model, if I want to get a value out of that, I have to know that I'm using a Mach 2 event object and call, get event args or something like that. And that wouldn't work with model glue because I'm trying to remember what the syntax is to get an event out of model glue, but it's not quite the same. So basically, if you switch frameworks, you'd have to go into your model and change all that stuff. So right here, I'm getting it in the controller, getting the product ID out, where I still know I'm using Mach 2, obviously, because it's a Mach 2 listener, and then passing just that simple integer in. So that's the difference. Now the model has no idea where that number came from and doesn't care. That's the whole idea. Does that answer your question? Okay. Yes. It is, but I mean, at least in my experience, I use like a session facade. So I'll create a separate model component that just does session stuff. And that way, when anything in my model needs to interact with the session scope, it all has to go through this one CFC that does session stuff, which means if I ever need to change to something else, I only have to change it in one place. So instead of having it scattered all over the place. So that's kind of the idea. Sorry, the question, I should say this because I guess it's being recorded. The question was, why would you move the session stuff into the model? So I'll have to remember to repeat the question. Basically, all the previous ideas on the slides about separating your model from your controller are really based on the idea of encapsulation. I would say that is the most essential design principle that you can wrap your head around, is the idea of encapsulation. Which is basically information hiding. Anytime you hide stuff from other parts of your application internally, you're leveraging encapsulation. And there's a lot of advantages to doing that. One of them is it makes things easier to change because the impact of your changes is localized. Because you've got like this little encapsulated bubble of functionality somewhere in your system, when you need to make a change to it, you're only changing what's inside that little encapsulated bubble. That's sort of the idea. And also, for the same reason, makes reuse easier because the dependencies are minimized. If you've got something that's nicely and tightly, you know, encapsulated and you need to kind of pick it up and drop it into another application maybe, ideally with no extra work, but, you know, possibly with a little bit of extra work, you can, you know, make that work in your new app with, you know, not a lot of extra work or effort. So encapsulation is a good thing. You can actually encapsulate almost anything. Most people think of encapsulation as like getters and setters in a CFC. You've got you're hiding like the internal implementation of an object. But there's actually lots of different kinds of encapsulation. You can encapsulate object creation. You can encapsulate different families of related things. Like most of the design patterns, if you hear about design patterns, they're all based on the idea of encapsulation and encapsulating things that are subject to variation. So encapsulation is great. You're all like, yes, I agree with you, Brian. Encapsulation is wonderful, but what does that have to do with keeping my model independent of my controller? This is where we get to the idea of a service layer. And I think I've heard a few people talk about it in other presentations during the course of the conference, but the idea is that the service layer encapsulates your model. It's sort of the, you know, outer shell that wraps up your whole model, and this is the gateway that everything has to go through and come out of. And I've got a little diagram that'll show, hopefully, make it a little more obvious. It presents the model as a set of services to any external system, meaning, you know, that can be model glue, it could be Mach 2, it could be web service calls. Anything can use the model as long as it uses this stable API, which is the third bullet here. It provides a stable API into your model, which means, you know, you've got a bunch of methods like get recently viewed products, which was in the example I was showing. And as long as that method remains stable, anything from the outside can call in to use that. And conversely, the model has no idea what from outside is asking it for get recently viewed products, which is the whole idea. So encapsulation sort of goes both ways, I guess, is the point there. And finally, it acts like a wall that keeps the model independent of your controller, which is getting back to the point of the presentation, I guess, the framework agnostic models. So it's sort of the gatekeeper for your model. I have a graphic that sort of shows it in action, or shows the idea behind it. On the outside, you've got anything that might want to use your model: flash remoting, HTML, UI controllers like Fusebox or whatever, and web service calls. You know, nowadays those two things are becoming bigger and bigger with the whole Web 2.0 and Flex stuff. Those all go through the service layer. You can see it's that outer shell basically on the outside, and that's the wrapper basically for your model. Beyond that, this diagram has domain model and then data source layer. That's optional. I mean, there's good reasons, maybe depending on the size and complexity of your app, to have those extra layers. For the same reason that encapsulation is nice for your service layer, there's really nice things about encapsulating things inside your model too. But it depends on your app and how big it is and how many extra layers of functionality you want to make it easier to change these things later. But the real key is, again, that outer layer, the service layer. So the next slide is basically, why bother doing this? Hopefully I've answered the question somewhat already, but you saw the first example where the listener had a bunch of logic in it, and that would work. You know, you could run an application like that. So why would I want to spend this extra time and effort or thinking, you know, CPU cycles in your head, basically, to worry about this stuff? And I think there's actually some compelling reasons to worry about it, or to think about it up front and take the time to do this. The most obvious one, maybe, is that you can switch frameworks. If your model doesn't know anything about your controller, if you needed to, you could switch from Fusebox to Model Glue, and your model wouldn't have to change at all. That doesn't happen a lot, but it could happen. And if you're selling your model, if you have components that you're selling to people and you don't want them to have to only be using Mach 2 or something, that's also, you know, could be a concern. You're able to easily allow for flash remoting, web service, and AJAX use of the model. Again, because the model doesn't care where these simple integers or whatever are being passed in or coming from. And the last four here are basically, they're true of having a model that's independent of your framework, but they're really just benefits of encapsulation in general. Easier team development because you've got encapsulated bits of functionality, including your model as a whole. You can give that to somebody to work on, and they don't have to know everything about the whole app. I mean, if you think about the first example where the listener had queries and session scope stuff and that, basically anybody that works on that kind of needs to know everything about the app, or at least enough about everything that's going on in that listener. Where if you keep things broken up, it's easier to kind of give those pieces to different people, and they can work on them independently. Easier debugging. In my experience, at least, fixing a bug is actually really easy. The hard part is finding the bug, right? It's usually you dig through all this code looking for a bug, and then you finally get to it, and it's like, I forgot to add one to this counter or something. So fixing it's usually really simple. The hard part is finding it. And again, when things are encapsulated, you're kind of isolating the impact of changes inside those little encapsulated bubbles. So hunting down the bugs is at least a little bit more targeted. Easier testing, it's basically the same idea. How easy it is to test something could be a good indicator of the quality of the design. If you have well-encapsulated pieces of functionality and you need to test it, usually you just only need to create a small environment to run the test, because that encapsulated thing doesn't depend on everything else in your application. But if you don't have a well-encapsulated system and your components are really interdependent on everything else in your application, you've basically got to instantiate half your system just to test one thing, which is usually not a very good sign. So easier testing and finally easier maintenance, kind of the same reason. When you need to go in and make a change, it's a little more targeted and you kind of know where to go. Again, there's like that design principle, don't repeat yourself, goes along with encapsulation of having only one reason to change. in your components, so usually you know where to go when you need to make a change. I have an example of a, you know, my framework agnostic model. It's basically based on a simple bookstore application that I've had on my website or on my blog for quite a while. It's kind of been my poster child for testing out new things. It's gone through, I don't even know, Fusebox 3, FuseQ, MolyGlue, Mach2 Reactor, ColdSpring. It's kind of my, you know, just, I try out everything using that bookstore. In this particular example, I have a single model and a single view, and they're all being used by three different apps, each using a different one of the main frameworks. I've got a Mach2, MolyGlue, and Fusebox 5.1 controllers, all using a single set of model CFCs and a single set of view templates. And since I'm using ColdSpring, there's a nice little bonus of doing that. I'll demonstrate automatically generating a remote facade so that you can call your model directly, like as a web service, and ColdSpring will actually create that for you. Did you have a question? Sure.
Yeah, did you use Reactor as well?
I did, actually. This app uses Reactor, but you wouldn't have to, but I did.
So that service like they're talking about, that your model.
Mm-hmm.
No,
the service layer is separate from Reactor. The service layer basically uses Reactor to do the database stuff.
ColdSpring, which is integrated with your objects, and actually Reactor as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then each of those three apps, we're going to see a service layer in there.
Exactly. Well, there's basically one service layer.
One service layer, mm-hmm, that all three of those
spots. Exactly.
And does the view also have a service layer?
No, it doesn't. The only thing that the view has is... The templates are the same. There's one set of templates, like for the display, but the only thing I did have to put in between was a simple file that, because each of the three frameworks has its own way of getting stuff out of the event, or you know, getting stuff to display in the view, I had to have a little file that does nothing but pull stuff out of those different objects. I can show it, and basically then passes it on when for the included template that just renders the HTML display. Absolutely. That's really the idea. Mm-hmm. It would talk to the same service layer. And like I said, since I'm using ColdSpring, I'll show just it automatically creating a facade. I don't know if you guys saw Chris Scott's presentation yesterday or if you heard of ColdSpring, but it's really cool. And you should look at it if you haven't yet. Let's see. I'll jump out of that and go to my browser. For starters, I'll just show it. Looking at it might be a little bit anticlimactic because they all look exactly the same. That's sort of the idea, even though they're all using different frameworks, and you'll see all the debugging output at the bottom for each framework. But that's the whole point, is that the view looks exactly the same for all three of them. So for starters, here is Mach2 1.1.1. And this will look familiar if anybody's downloaded the bookstore from my website, because it's the exact same app. I just played around with the components a little bit to make it work with all three of the frameworks. Again, really simple. There's a little menu here. Here's some featured products, shopping carts empty, recent products, order update. If I click on one of these products... Oh, by the way, yeah, down here at the bottom, you can see it's the Mach2 trace information. So this is dumped from the Mach2 trace plugin. Yay, Underworld Live. I can change the quantity, whatever. You see, it's very simple, but it works. It's just complex enough that it's not Hello World, but it's not too crazy either. Anyway, so here's the Mach2 version. You can see there it is. If I jump back to the app list... Here is the MolyGlue Unity version. Looks familiar, except now you can see it's got MolyGlue debugging stuff at the bottom. Shopping cart's empty because each one of these is running in its own application scope, own session scope. So, I can click on this just to prove I'm not lying. But you get the idea. It's the same app. Under the hood, it's using all the same model and the same view. If I jump back again, show the Fusebox 5.1 version. Sean's, I think, releasing that Saturday. Again, exactly the same, except now Fusebox debugging output at the bottom. So I think you get the idea. They're all the same. I mean, each. The only difference is that one's using Fusebox, one's using Model Glue, and one's using Mach 2. So if I jump back to the app list, I can show just really quickly, this is the WSDL that Cold Spring generates. Basically, right now I have WSDL methods for all of my model service layer methods. You can actually tell it which ones you want to expose as a web service. I just expose them all. And then here it is actually using CF invoke tags to call that remote product service is what Cold Spring generated for me. And you can see here's the output of that query. The response from the web service is the same thing that was on the front page of the website. So these are the featured products, basically, that we see. And down here is, I'm passing in a simple integer again. Now you see why we wanted to only pass something simple, because a web service can pass that very easily. And then these are the products related to product two. So that's the three different apps running, basically. But probably more interesting than seeing it, because they all look the same, is having a peek at the code. And I won't bore you by going through like every single file, but we can start with, let's say, the Mach 2 version. Here are my listener components. Is that big enough? Everybody can read that? Okay. I'll expand it, and you can see I've got a bunch of listener methods. This probably looks just like the little example I put up in the slide earlier. Get featured products, get recently viewed products, and you can see it's the same idea. Basically, I just kind of compressed it to. I'm terse, so I like things to be small. Again, when I was saying I like my listener methods to be short, I wasn't kidding. But again, you can see the same ideas that was presented in the slide is, you know, if there's an event argument named product ID, pass that in, and then get the recent products and set it into the event object. So maybe more interesting then would be to peek at the product service. You can see up here I've got a common directory. That's basically where all the common model and view stuff lives. And all three of the apps are just calling that. They're all using a single Cold Spring instance to configure all the components and make them available. So here is my product service. And let's see. Here was the update recently viewed products. And you can see here it's got that product ID value coming in. So that's the simple value that the controller was passing in. And then here is Ray, Ray mentioned earlier. I actually have a session facade that manages all the stuff that has to do with the session scope. So I call that and ask it to actually update that array that was in the session scope. This way, all my session stuff only happens in one place. And I'm just passing this product ID in. So. Really quickly, I'll show the Cold Spring XML for this, because again, they're all using the same Cold Spring XML file. This is the reactor configuration. So this, again, was the question about how reactor is being used. In fact, I can show that if you'd like in the product service. I've got this one, get featured products. You can see it's calling get product gateway, which is basically getting a gateway that Cold Spring injected into it. That was created by Reactor. And get by fields is one of the Reactor methods that says basically based on featured product equals one in the database, give me back a query. You know, it basically generates all the SQL for you, so that's why it's kind of cool. It has its pros and cons, but I like it. Back to the Reactor config, the Cold Spring config file. This is all the Reactor stuff. Reactor factory. These are the actual, common model components that are being used. Cart factory, session facade, product service, all this good stuff. Product DAO, these are all gotten from the reactor factory. So the question about where do those come from or how do they get used by the service layer, that's how. And down at the bottom, I've got, this is actually how Cold Spring generates that remote facade that gets used by the web service calls. A few lines of XML to set it up, but it's worth it because basically it just automatically creates a CFC named remote product service, puts it wherever I say I want it to go, with any methods I want exposed to it, and you know it just creates the CFC for me. So it's pretty handy. And that works with flash remoting or web services, so kind of killing two birds with one stone if you use Cold Spring. Yes?
How is, like, with a remote service, one would assume lots of additional security that's being called
outside of your apps? Yep, the question is how, if you're having a facade component generated automatically, how would you implement security for web service calls? There's a couple of different ways you can do it, actually. I would argue that security probably also belongs in the model somewhere anyway, but one of the nice things about Cold Spring is you can actually use its aspect-oriented programming capabilities to inject security around any of your methods that you want. So that's a more complicated way of doing it, obviously, and it takes, I don't know if you've looked at Cold Spring's AOP stuff, but it gets kind of, you know, your eyes start to roll up in the back of your head unless you're Chris Scott, basically. But you can do it that way, or you can use the role stuff in the CFC. You know, there's like a roles attribute for that. Because your application.cfc executes even when a web service gets called, you can actually kind of set things up. If you set up the security framework like CF login or something like that in application.cfc, you can do it that way also. So does that answer your question?
I think so.
Okay. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I mean, honestly, you're right. There is obvious concerns with web service security. You can tell Cold Spring to generate, get, or open up or expose to the remote world whichever methods you want. So you can limit not only, I mean, you can just say, I only want these two methods in my CFC to be exposed as a web service. So it's not like they have free rein on your whole component if you don't want them to. So. And then down at the bottom, really quick, just to show it really is all using the same Cold Spring file. This is the ModelGlue Unity configuration. I don't know if anybody's messed with ModelGlue Unity yet, but it basically uses Cold Spring to configure itself, which is pretty cool. I think the Mach 2 folks are probably going to copy that before too long because it's a good idea. And you can do some cool stuff with it once Cold Spring's setting things up. You can actually override the way it's setting up the framework itself. So there's some cool stuff to be done there. Now let's see. I guess I could just ask because there's tons of files here. Is there anything specific that folks would want to see? Or I just a couple hands go up. So yeah.
Could you show how you're injecting Reactor into that service layer?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's actually really easy. It's probably going to be anticlimactic. Reactor gets created. First, I create a configuration for Reactor. This is basically telling it where do I want it to generate the files, what's my data source type, what's my data source name. Then I create a Reactor factory and pass that configuration into it. That basically creates a Reactor. And once that's created, I can call methods like create gateway on the Reactor factory that Cold Spring just created for me, and that will actually return a gateway instance named, in this case, product. You tell it which one you want. And now Cold Spring has a handle on this product gateway, and I can then say up here for my product service, one of the beans that's getting injected into it is product gateway. Does that make sense? Yeah? And I think you had one? I was actually sort of trying to allude to that, and that's what it is. It's called the view state. I'll show you how I'm doing it. Basically, in each app, I'll show you the ModelGlue version, just because we haven't peeked at it yet. In the pages, the question was, how am I getting the event specific or the framework specific view stuff out of the framework to be used in my common set of views? And here's the answer. I have a file for each of the pages that I'm using. in the directory for each framework, but all it's doing, like here's get featured products, and all it's doing is pulling, is calling the view state to get the individual pieces of information out of it, and then I'm calling this common display template that actually does all the output of it. So the only thing that's framework specific about this is just getting the values out. Like if I show you the same file for Mach 2, that's get featured products. You can see it looks exactly the same. It's including the same display template, but the only thing that's different is now I'm using get arg to get stuff out of the event instead of the view context. And for Fusebox, I actually didn't have to do anything because Fusebox just has the attribute scope. So does that answer your question?
So you can fill a view that actually assigns those values to the
component itself? No, I mean, this is just a view file, but instead of having the HTML on this page, all I'm doing is getting the individual values that I need to populate the content of the page out of the framework, and then I'm calling this HTML file, which I can show you that as well. Let me pull it up really quick. Pages. Not sure I follow. What do you mean? Mm-hmm.
That query can assign a generic variable that can be used in any view. So when so whether it's a view question or a view state, you're retrieving a value of a variable of that something that's combined method.
Mm-hmm.
You're just assigning it to a variable that can be used. I mean, it could just be something like
featured products or whatever. Are you saying could I do that or I should have done that? Oh, yeah, okay. I don't think you can. I mean, that's actually a good question, and I think I thought about it briefly. Maybe Ray can answer. Is there a way to, in Model Glue, not have it put something into the view state, but just put it into a simple variable? I think you have to get everything out of the view state, don't you?
Yeah.
Okay. So it might be possible. I actually didn't even try. I probably should have. Yeah, exactly. You can definitely do it in Fusebox, which is why I didn't have to have this sort of layer, this little extraction layer for the view stuff in Fusebox. But because Mach 2 puts everything in the event object and Model Glue puts everything in the view state, I just put this in this little layer in between to pull that stuff out. So. But like I said, the guts of it, this is the common display file that gets used by all three. And this is where, I mean, obviously this is a really simple app, so there's not a lot of HTML here, but this is just the HTML that all of them would use. Yes, sir, in the back?
What do you do when you have, far more
The only time you'd have to do this, or what I just showed you doing with stripping some things out of the view state or the event object to display it in the view, is if you really were having three different apps all using the same controller and the same model. I mean, normally you probably wouldn't do this, right? You wouldn't have three apps just for the sake of having three.
Mm-hmm.
It is, and you're right. Well, it's actually tied to the controller because the each of the frameworks has a way of getting stuff out to be used in the view. Like Fusebox has the attribute scope, Mach 2 has an event object, and Model Glue has a view state object that get all of those get populated with what comes back from your model calls. So you're right that in that instance, basically any time you use one of those frameworks, there is some coupling between the view and the controller because you have to know how to get that stuff out. Once the controller gets it back from the model, you have to know how to get that into your view, basically. And So you're right, there is some coupling that this little indirection solves just for this example, because I'm using three different controller frameworks for this, you know, for this example. Normally in real life you wouldn't, right? You'd have one app that you could switch sometime if you wanted to, but you wouldn't actually have three running. The point of the example is really just to show you could, if it does work, you can use it in multiple contexts. So, but there is some coupling between the view and the controller. There's really no way around it. No, I mean, it just depends on what's coming out. I mean, usually you've got mostly queries, right, a lot of the time is queries coming back. You can have beans just if it's like an edit form or something and you've got like a user bean that you want to use to populate the form. You can have that. But, I mean, even if you use a bean to wrap up the user information instead of a query, you still have to get it out of the controller somehow. You know what I mean? You still have to call get arg or, you know, get value from the view state to get it, because that's where the framework actually keeps it before it passes it, you know, before it makes it available to the view. Sorry. So there's really no way around it. However the data comes back, or however the data is packaged when it comes back from the model, you still have to get it out of the controller somewhere. So does that answer your question?
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Or is there any other piece of code that you'd like me to peek at? Yes, sir. Exactly. Yep. Again, normally you wouldn't probably worry too much about it because you wouldn't be running three different apps all using the same view. I mean, in real life you wouldn't do that. The demo was just to show that you could if you really wanted to, or to prove that you can do it. All three of them can use the same model and the same view. In most cases, you'd probably just have this at the top of your view file. And if you did switch frameworks, yes, you'd have to go through your view templates and make the change. Just, you know, I guess the price you pay for doing that. Most people don't really switch frameworks. It's just one of the advantages to being able to have your model encapsulated. Probably the real benefit of doing it, that of having your model encapsulated, is like web service calls, AJAX calls, flash remoting calls, things like that, in addition to having an HTML version of the site also. So I haven't heard too many people actually switching frameworks, but it does happen. I know it does happen, but it's not a common thing. So. Any other questions? I think we're probably getting pretty close to the end anyway, so I think there's like 5 minutes left. So is there anything you want me to show on the code side, or are you code overload now? Yep. Mm-hmm.
Will you go ahead and
just go through your session facade? Sure, absolutely. Session facade. Here it is, and you can see, if you remember from the previous version or previous the listener method, we're calling the session facade and saying update recently viewed products. This is where that actually happens. And this is a little bit more complicated than the version I showed in the slide, because I didn't want all the extra code here. This one actually loops through it first to make sure that product's not already in it, so you don't end up with two products, the same product over and over again in your list of recent products. So it loops through it, and if it's not already in there, it adds it and then appends it to the session scope here, or deletes it from the session scope. I have it capped at three recent products, so you don't get 50 recent products if you're looking. But that's just for the sake of the little demo app. But the gist of this is you wrap all your references to the session scope up in one place and call it from anywhere in your model that you need to. So if you ever need to change this, you only have to do it in one place. So instead of having session scope stuff sprinkled all over your entire model. Exactly. In fact, the model doesn't even know that I'm using the session scope, right? I could switch to cookies or client variables and nothing else would ever have to change. So. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. It's encapsulation on another layer. I mean, you're already getting the idea. That's why I said encapsulation is so important, because not just encapsulating the model, but even inside the model, encapsulating things from inside of it. And there's a lot of advantages to doing it that way. Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm.
You can do that, but the problem, or to me, the issue with that is it's so open-ended. I like to kind of lock it down a little bit more. I mean, but you're right. This is probably more just personal preference. It's probably a call. If you had tons and tons of different things that you needed to set into the session scope, you might not want to have to write a method for every single one of them. Yeah. I mean, usually I'll do it. If I don't have that much stuff to set in the session scope, and in all honesty, I don't usually have too much stuff that I need. I have like a user object sometimes and a shopping cart if I'm building an e-commerce site, but there's usually not tons of stuff that needs to be put in the session scope. So it's not usually not too much of an issue. But you're right. I agree. It's one of those it depends answers. But if you had tons of different things that you need to put in the session scope, a generic like get and set would probably be, you know, more appropriate. But the only problem with that then is it's wide open. Now, any developer can set anything they want into the session scope. Is that good or bad? You know, it depends on your team and yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's kind of the easier way to do it. I would agree. So this one just kind of, yeah. Yeah, and it forces you, like I'm saying, I can only update a recent product, and I can't just set whatever I want in the session scope. So, and did you have a second question? Or? I can show you the service layer because it's here somewhere. I think I already have it open. Yeah, product service. But in all honesty, in this app, I'm not actually creating any beans or anything because the app's so simple. It's just mostly queries coming back. But if I expand it, you can see that they're all, you know, actually calls to the product gateway, which Cold Spring Injected, which is a Reactor gateway, basically, that does the database query stuff for me. I shouldn't say that. Here's a product record, which is sort of a bean in Reactor terms. You know, it uses the active record pattern, which means you can call save on it and it automatically saves itself to the database. But Reactor, you know, I get that from the Reactor factory. I populate it with values from a transfer object, and now I get the related products for that by calling a get related products iterator. Basically, in Reactor, you can relate tables together, and I can say, for this product, give me the related products for it, and it'll bring it back. So, not to confuse anyone more than they already are, but that's Reactor stuff, so I don't want to, you know, go too far. We've got about 2 minutes left, so if there's any other questions, or... Yes, ma'am. I am. Good question. In fact, thank you for saying that, because I actually had one last slide to show. Oh, sorry. Will my bookstore be on the website? Because that's sort of where I've been keeping it. Really quickly, I'll just run through this. I had some questions to help make sure that you're creating a framework agnostic model. How much work would it be to switch frameworks? What would I have to change to make this work with web services or flash remoting? If the answer is a lot of stuff, that's probably not good. You probably need to think that through a little bit better. Could I reuse the parts of this in another app? The answer should probably be yes, as much as possible. And how easy is it to test? So again, goes back to things that are easy to test usually means that they're pretty well encapsulated, not heavily dependent on other parts of the system. And then I had this questions and comments, which we've already been doing, but that's my blog address. I forgot to put it in the presentation that you've got in your printout. I apologize for that. I realized it just the last week or something, so I added it to the slide here. But they made us turn the presentations in a month ago, so I forgot about that. So I will post it up on the blog so that you can download the whole thing. Oh, sorry. Yep, briankotek.com/blog. And I guess, oh, yes, and don't forget to fill out your survey forms, please, so I know how well or poorly I did. Yes, sir.
Real quick, just a point on your session. Working for a hosting company, I've seen many, many, many clients grow and have hardware when they have to move to a second server, either for load balancing, either for failover or volume, and major hardware switches to session 5.
Absolutely.
So something like that from the outset would just...
Save yourself a whole lot of pain. Yep. I know that from personal experience, so pain is a good teacher. Well, thanks all. Thank you so much for coming.